Hello, listener, and welcome to episode 72, and this time it is 72, of Good Copy, Bad Copy, the B2B copywriting podcast. We're sorry we had to sort of skip a month, but we have a corker of an episode to make up for it this time, I promise. I'm David Maguire, Creative Director at Radix Communications, and you'll be relieved to learn I'm here with our CEO, Fiona Campbell-Howes.
Hello.
Hi. It's been a long time.
It has. I think we've been doing all the things, haven't we?
All of the things. It's been crazy.
Yeah, so I think you've been going to a different foreign city every month, every week rather.
It feels that way, certainly.
Doing training and workshops around the world, and I think I've just been a full-time writer. I think we've been very, very busy, so I've been doing lots of the thing that I like best.
Oh, great.
Which is doing actual client writing work.
Goodness me.
So that has been fun.
We'll have to put that right.
Yes, back to management.
This month, we're going to examine the idea that B2B marketers need to be braver with their content. I'll be talking to the B2B marketing colossus that is Maureen Blandford, and thinking about some practical, sensible things you can actually do to improve your content instead of just being braver. What did you think of the interview, Fiona?
Well, Maureen's always such good value, isn't she? Always worth listening to, and everything she says is always really sensible. And I think one of her top tips is something that we've talked about quite a lot on this podcast, going back through the years. So it's good to hear that other people think in the same way too.
So that's coming up in just a moment. But first, I would just like a put in a quick reminder that our first ever webinar is on exactly this subject. So 5 terrifying risks you should definitely take with your B2B content is on Wednesday the 5th of June, and you'll find details on radix-communications.com. There are still some places available, so reserve one while you can.
I'm very intrigued by your 5 terrifying risks. Yeah. I want to know if one of them is start a sentence with a conjunction.
You would, yes.
Actually. It is. See, I don't know what you're going to be talking about in this webinar. I just hope that was one of them.
No spoilers. apart from, I think the big spoiler is I'm not going to say you should just be braver and just take stupid risks with your content.
Quite
this
right
is more
too.
About sensible, calculated risks that feel scary but aren't actually that risky at all. So, listener, if you have questions or comments about this episode, I can imagine there might be arguments on both sides in this one, so we do want to hear from you. You can contact us at podcast@radix-communications.com or tweet at us. You'll find us at radixcom. That's RADIXCOM. So, back in March, I sat in the Get Stacked auditorium in London and watched open-mouthed as Maureen Blandford shocked the assembled crowd by basically tearing into the entire B2B marketing scene, including the MarTech vendors who were sitting in front of her. In particular, I wanted to follow up with Maureen on the idea of content and the way that B2B marketers are constantly criticised for a perceived lack of bravery. Maureen's built a career in complex sale B2B marketing on both sides of the Atlantic. She's now based in Chicago as VP for marketing for the event fundraising tech firm GiveSmart, which is part of Community Brands. And she agreed to give us a few minutes of her time. So I started by asking whether she's upset about the messages from content marketing experts and MarTech brands.
Well, sure, and it's crazy, and it has made me angry for years, because really what they're doing is trying to sell their own stuff. So consultants or companies that are selling, you know, content marketing services, or certainly all of the bazillion MarTech vendors who are trying to sell their own stuff by making marketers think that they have some horrible gap, and if they buy the thing or they go to the content conference, it will fix this horrible, deformed part of themselves, which is just the junkiest way to approach the market or to sell. So, and really, I would contend that most B2B marketers, I really can't speak to B2C, but most B2B marketers are drowning under tech that doesn't work, as well as, and this doesn't get enough attention because people can't say this publicly, there are a lot of really terrible bosses out there. So when the content marketing folks or the MarTech vendors are saying, gosh, if marketers just understood data, marketers, why don't you understand data? They don't understand because most of the people who are saying those messages haven't been on a team or haven't led a team in forever because, you know, selling to marketers doesn't count. So they haven't sold to procurement or CIOs or whatever. And they're saying, why don't marketers get data? And the reality is those of us who are on actual teams at actual companies are trying to cobble together data across different systems, whether you've merged or acquired. There are data gaps, which I talked about in London with our friends at B2B Marketing. But there is so many tech issues that we have today that we're cobbling data together. And then on the content side, I think I'm probably in the first role that I've ever had where I am completely in control of the content we do because I have a fabulous boss. Most of my peers, whether they're leading or they're individual contributors or somewhere in between, have strange directives that come to them. So half the time they get to do great work and half the time they have to follow the whim of some leader somewhere. So it was a long response, David, but very high level. That's what's actually going on, and how the tech vendors and content vendors are selling to us is just a crock.
And one of the things that you said that really was quite striking, this whole idea that, and I think I'm, at times I may have been guilty of it myself, the idea that somehow B2B marketers need to be braver in their content, yeah. You know, and you called it out, and rightly so, that just to say that right marketers aren't brave enough, it's kind of patronizing, isn't it?
It is horrible. I mean, so I'm trying not to cuss.
I'm not
very good at not cussing. but for fuck's sake, again, these people who are saying this, so the MarTech vendors or the content creators, and what they're trying to do, God love them, they're trying to sell. They have a revenue target to hit as well. And they've been pretty successful at scaring people or demeaning people into attending their conferences or buying their stuff. So, you know, good on them. But really what marketers have taken on is they start to believe these things. So the conference you and I were at a couple months ago, the people that came up to us, and you were with me for several of them, the people that came up to me and said, oh my God, I thought I was the only one. And yes, and gosh, there's other people out there. And it's just a real, it is just a shame. The brave thing in particular, what marketers deal with on a daily basis, again, the expectations of my peers who are head of sales or my boss who's the executive of the division, their expectations, all these MarTech vendors and their nonsense that they flood the marketplace with, that makes its way to CSOs and to CEOs. So they come to us and think like, we should be able to do X, Y, Z. And it's like, yeah, you think that's what we should be able to do because you've heard the lies the MarTech vendors are selling in the market. So the bravery is not about doing better work, because who doesn't want to do better work? The bravery is sort of the Rube Goldberg machine that we have to work while we're trying to deliver against these kind of obscene expectations because of what the content folks have said and what the MarTech vendors have said. It's just ridiculous. Marketers don't need to be more brave. The environment needs to change a little bit. We all have tough stuff to deal with, but marketers that I know are working really, really hard to work with systems that are just suboptimal with integration, and then being able to get content out to the market that is going to resonate with targets.
Sure. So, I mean, from a content point of view, I mean, clearly marketers have stuff to deal with. A lot of B2B tech content, though, is, if we're honest, is not great. Is it kind of the systems and the time that people don't have, the weird diktats from strange bosses? What is it that's stopping people doing better content more often. You know, on the, you know, the writing side, I guess, because that's what our audience tunes in for.
Yes. So if we are going to critique the actual content, there are a couple of reasons, and one I've been talking about for a long time, and I wrote a book many years ago about this. But we still, at the university level, are not teaching B2B. We teach standard marketing. It's all consumer examples that might have changed recently. But even up until 5 years ago, I wasn't seeing much B2B stuff. So that's one reason. The second reason is that marketers still aren't in the field enough with salespeople, listening to the actual words that prospects and salespeople are saying to each other. And that hinders kind of a third thing. So the whole like marketing awards and that glossy stuff, which I think this is getting better, especially with the marketing B2B folks and ITSMA. But it used to be that, you know, people were really wanted to get stuff on like a demo reel or an awards reel. And what I have said for years is the sexiest stuff in B2B is what resonates with targets. And generally what resonates with targets are their own words. And you'll know this because this is the space that you're in. I don't need to come up with, if I'm selling, particularly in a complex sale, I need marketing to behave the way in the market that great salespeople behave. So bubble up pain, ask good questions. And that looks very different in my view. I don't know what you guys think, but that looks very different from consumer marketing to me.
Yeah, I think it's being, you know, obviously one talks about the kind of the human to human aspect. And it's true, but it's all in that sort of, it's in a very defined work context that people don't get. But yeah, I completely yes. get what you mean about the language. I think the stuff that makes me a better B2B writer is when I go and, you know, I'll do a case study and I'll get to talk to the customer about what they actually care about.
Right.
Or when I'll go and, you know, when I used to work in a more full service marketing agency, I used to go and work on clients' exhibition stands and just see the conversations that the salespeople were having. It was so enlightening just to see how that conversation sounds in the real world.
And that has to feed our marketing. So still, so this will cross over a couple areas I've talked about, but still you have the product folks. So I am not a fan of product marketing. I think product marketing, some of the basics of product marketing are very important. So assessing the market and what are the features, functions, benefits. But then that stuff has to inform the messages to the market. So still we have, and this is such a huge opportunity for B2Bs, any B2B, anywhere, any sector, any industry that can be communicating to pain and value versus product features. You'll know this, you know, most B2B stuff is still very way too product heavy.
Sure. I mean, there's a place for product marketing, of course, you know, where it has value and it has its place in the funnel where people are at that stage to make a decision. And I think that some B2B marketing goes the other way and shies away from helping anybody to make a buying decision because they've really bought into the content thing and they spend all their time at the top of the funnel. And sometimes that can make the buying process harder. But it's that thing of putting the two together and working out what the person wants to know at the right time.
Exactly,
I guess.
Exactly.
What do you think then, you know, we have, you know, if there's a marketer or a B2B writer listening that struggles with this stuff and feels relieved that they don't need to be any braver than they are, what do they need to do instead, do you think? What can they do that will help them do work that they're really proud of more often?
So I would say two things. There's loads of stuff we can do, but two things are really important. And one is get out there with salespeople, even if it's just on the phone, but audit some some of their calls. If you can get salespeople to let you ride with them or be in person at customer or prospect calls, that is invaluable. And the other thing for me, and so these would be my top two priorities, is talk to your peers. Talk to your peers that are in similar industries, and I would say probably similar deal sizes. So I could not have had the success I've had. I could not actually do my job if I wasn't constantly in contact with a small personal advisory board saying, what are you doing? What's working? What part of the funnel is performing here? Oh my gosh, you did that there. I have this data gap here. What content are you using? So I could go on forever, but every week I'm probably touching base with two or three people in my network, finding out what they're doing.
Great. That makes total sense. Yeah. Thank you. That's really super helpful. Is there anything else while you have the ear of B2B content marketers and writers, anything that you'd like to add?
Absolutely. And that is this. Our true north, this is in our control. Our true north has to stop being the faff that is spewed out by the MarTech ecosystem and the content cabal. And I'm not going to name any names beyond that. But if they are demeaning our practice and our peers and our space, this is not the content for you. You need to really be focusing on your peers. Our peers really should be our true north, what's working and what's not. But seriously, turn away from the content cabal and the nonsense from the MarTech ecosystem.
That's amazing. Maureen Blanford, thank you so much for your time, and have a great day.
My pleasure. Thanks, David.
Thanks again to Maureen for being so generous with her time and so forthright with her views. Fiona, what do you think? Are B2B marketers treated unfairly by the content cabal?
See, I think this idea of a content cabal, that's new to me, and I think that's really interesting. And the more you think about it, the more it probably is true that, you know, there are people who haven't worked as marketers in large or even medium-sized or even maybe small B2B tech firms telling those marketers what they should and shouldn't be doing. And I completely see it from Maureen's point of view that, you know, they're dealing with so much that, you know, they know this stuff, but, you know, there's all this internal politics to deal with. And there's all kinds of other things going on that people who haven't been in that job don't realise. And I think we've probably been a little bit guilty of the same sort of thing ourselves.
I think hands up. Yeah, we probably have. But I think where it comes from, a lot of it just comes out of frustration that a lot of B2B content is just not very good.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the things that Maureen was saying about things that marketers should be doing really resonated with me. So absolutely the thing about, you know, going along with sales to talk to customers and listening to the kind of language that customers use and talking back to them in that language in your marketing content, that's something that frustrates us, I think, quite a bit, because we quite often see marketers that don't do that. And then when we try to put the language of the customer into our content, quite often it gets taken out, and that is quite frustrating.
It sounds a lot of the time like B2B content is just the marketers talking to the stakeholders. You know, the audience is internal a lot of the time, instead of thinking about who the real audience is.
Exactly. There's a lot of, oh, you know, I can't put that in because this won't get approved by so-and-so. And I just remember, it's something that's always stuck in my mind. A long, long time ago, I did a case study interview for, a GIS-type product. And I was interviewing the customer, and she was a huge fan of this product. And, you know, I said, you know, what made you aware of the product in the first place? And she said, oh, I went to a conference, and I saw it demoed, and I just fell in love with it at first sight. So I thought, that is, what better endorsement can you get than that? So into the case study went verbatim. I saw it demoed and I just fell in love with it at first sight. Off that copy goes to the client. They go, we can't possibly say that in a case study. Let's replace it with something like, I immediately realised the efficiencies we could gain and, the and how it would optimise our processes. And like, oh no, you've got a genuine, amazing customer comment there and you want to take that out.
Yes, and I can just hear a collective groan of recognition from the audience, from anyone that's ever written P2P copy. Because you're right, it's the kind of thing that happens. But similarly, I mean, the point Maureen was making is that it's not always down to the marketer whether you can get that in and whether they can, you know, those battles, I guess they have to pick their battles sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you know, the bigger the firm, the more politics there are. And, you know, Maureen's talking about different stakeholders wanting different things. And if you're in a very large organisation, you can have all kinds of different stakeholders. I mean, as we know, you know, feeding into the content that we're writing, and then you get approval by committee. And so what comes out is just like a massive compromise. So, yeah, and there's not very much you can do about that.
Yeah, I mean, committees is one thing. And then just, you know, a random boss is, you know, is another thing. I mean, I've heard stories of marketers being told, we must do Instagram because the CEO's partner likes these influencers.
Yeah.
So therefore, you will do Instagram because they say you must.
Yes, yeah. And something that I've been hearing quite a lot recently, actually, before it was like, you know, we came across marketers that got content marketing and wanted to do content, but the bosses were sceptical about it. What I'm hearing now from quite a lot of prospects that we speak to is, the CEO is really into this idea of content marketing and says we must do one blog a week or we must do one blog a day. And like, we don't know how we're going to deliver this, because if you're trying to do something like one blog a day, your quality is just going to go out the window, isn't it? Unless you've got something really amazing to talk about every day and an amazing writer to write it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, it's possible to do that, but it takes a lot of investment in quality, because I think that's the thing for me that's not necessarily a bravery issue, but where people fall down. It's when we become slaves to a schedule, yeah, rather than because we have something to say. I mean, looking at our internal QA scores here at Radix for the quality assurance work that we do on the first drafts, the one that is related to how we're briefed, where our first drafts, you know, need a bit of extra work most often, is that there is not enough objective value in there for the reader, because, you know, usually that's because, well, you know, we need a blog post, but we haven't got time to put anything good in this blog post. Can you just write a thing?
Yes, we've got a topic. Just go and write something about it. Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of that also, again, comes back down to often marketers aren't talking to customers, and so they don't know what it is that's going to provide value. You know, I think they've got an idea of what they think might provide value, but once you're out there talking to customers, I mean, I think you talked to Maureen about how you used to go on exhibition stands and listen to those conversations. And you know, I found the same, not necessarily on exhibition stands, but going to client events to write them up afterwards and listening to the actual conversations that customers have with salespeople. It's always like a world away from what we're writing often, or what we're being asked to write often in the marketing materials.
Absolutely. And I think that sometimes the way, instead of, you know, of doing that and just taking a risk, just being bold, because without that information, without that insight and that knowledge, you could just be leaping somewhere completely random. Like, it has to be planned. But instead of taking, it's more, I think, about building relationships inside and outside the organization. Because the amount that you can get from befriending a product geek, you know, an engineer, befriending a salesperson, befriending a customer, so you can have those informal conversations, enable you to get value, I think, into the content if you're a marketer in a low risk kind of way, because you begin to understand what the customers care about and how the customers talk. You know, you begin to understand what's most effective and how people buy, and, you know, and then the stuff the geeks will give you can give you that skill, to that knowledge to answer that that question and provide that value that people need. But it's just finding those people. And I think sometimes there's the fear, sales don't want to talk to us because we're marketing and they hate us.
Yeah.
You know, engineering don't want to talk to us because we're marketing and they hate us.
Yeah.
But there will always be, I think, somebody often in, you know, a research team or a developer or something, somebody that's just happy to chat about what they're working so hard on, or a salesperson that, even if it is under the guise of having a moan about how bad the marketing they've had so far is, you know, there are conversations that you can make happen, because business is full of people that like to talk about what they do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this comes back to, I think, something else that Maureen was saying, that to be valuable, a piece of content, it doesn't... you kind of get the sense from this content cabal, as she calls it, that to be valuable, to be great content, it has to be in some way, well, bold, as you say, or opinionated, or quirky, or different in some way. And I think maybe that's true at the top of the funnel, but when you're getting further down into sort of consideration and decision-making, the value completely changes. You have to be telling people useful things about your product and how it's going to help them with their issues and help them with their problems. And so maybe if you're talking to sales, that gives you some idea of the problems that customers are facing. But yes, you do need to be talking to engineers and product people to understand what's so valuable about the product itself, and then bringing that into content that might not win any awards because it's not flashy and it's not quirky and it's not opinionated, but it's really useful product content.
Absolutely. And I think it's a lot about having the evidence to back it up, so that you're not bringing, you know, it's the classic thing, you're not bringing opinions to a data fight.
Yeah.
You know, so what you don't want to do is to be sitting across from a stakeholder or a manager and they're saying, you know, and it's your preference against their preference. You know, they think professional content looks like this, and, you know, and their version doesn't have contractions, you know, and
yes,
let it go.
speaking from personal
doesn't
experience,
doesn't have conjunctions at the start of the sentence. But actually, once you can talk about the science, once you can talk about, you know, the evidence and the research that's been done into how difficult it is to read something on a mobile device, the length of time that you can save your stakeholder, your reader, by making it easier for them to read, to digest the content, and actually go, well, you say they're time poor. If we write it in this way rather than that way, on this white paper, we'll save them 7 minutes or whatever it is. You know, that stuff is available. The stuff around, you know, mobile best practice, the stuff around cognitive load, that, you know, that stuff is out there, so that it's not just some managers going, well, at school I was told this.
Yes, and you're right, that's often not the marketer that's saying that, but that's the other people within the organisation that are looking at the content and thinking back to what they learned at school and how it doesn't conform to that. Yeah. So,
and I don't know, I mean, is that, I don't know if that having that conversation is bravery or if it's just being clear about the reasons why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's just going to depend from marketer to marketer, stakeholder to stakeholder, organisation to organisation, whether that's a real fight and you have to be really brave to kind of contradict what somebody's telling you, or whether you just need the time to sit down with the person and go, look, the data says this, so we should do it this way. And often I think people just don't have time. Often they just maybe just agree just because they've got 100 other things on their plate.
Yeah, so it's... So we're not saying necessarily be braver, we're just saying...
I almost think it's pick your battles. Pick your battles and know what you're prepared to fight for and fight for it.
But do fight for something.
Do fight for something, definitely, yes. Otherwise, why are you in your job?
And the question I guess we have to ask, you know, if we're making statements like that, is, are we getting back to this thing of berating marketers, or are we just sort of making suggestions of things they can do instead of being bolder?
Yeah, I think I'm really sorry if you've been listening to this and you're a marketer and you felt like we're berating you. We're not. I think we're just thinking about, from our point of view as writers, what makes really good content that delivers really good results. And I think it is that, you know, getting the voice of the customer in there and thinking about what's valuable to the customer. So I think it's just that.
I hope so. You know, that we're not saying, you know, this is your fault.
Absolutely not. No, completely. I mean, I've worked in a very, very large technology company and I know the politics and how difficult it is to get things done and just how much you've got on your plate and how little time there is to kind of stop and reflect and, you know, pick sort of lengthy arguments with people. So I think you do have to pick your battles.
And believe it or not, that is all we have time for this episode. I do hope it's been worth the wait. Remember, if you'd like to chat with us or to pick up 5 practical things you can do to make your own content stand out, please do join us for our webinar, 5 Terrifying Risks You Should Definitely Take With Your B2B Content, on Wednesday the 5th of June. Spoiler alert, I promise I won't tell you to be braver, but I will tell you how you might want to consider doing things a little bit differently while minimizing the scary bit. We hope to see you there. And if you have any comments or thoughts on this episode, and I imagine you might, please do email us at podcast@radix-communications.com. Send us a voice memo if you like, or find us on Twitter at radixcom. You can find more content online and sign up for our monthly copywriting advice emails at radix-communications.com/insights. Until next time, remember, the opposite of bravery is not cowardice, it's conformity.
Goodbye.